Hill Manufacturing was your first endeavor where you, along with a partner or two, but you guys bought it yourselves.
Correct.
And you actually became an owner-operator.
Correct.
For a period of time, you were very much an operator. We talked about that last
time. Right.
So that's kind of where the stories converge, is that Mike started out in, you know, the finance and business world and M&A world and gravitated over to become an owner-operator. I started out very much as an owner-operator and have gravitated toward doing deals.
Right.
So that's kind of where our paths have converged, so to speak.
Welcome to Making Sparks, the podcast where we ignite your passion for metal fabrication and fuel your business success. Join industry leaders and dive deep into the world of metalworking. From business insights to tips of the trade, Making Sparks is your forge of knowledge. During each episode, discover success stories, innovative solutions, and expert interviews that light the path to business growth. Subscribe today and grow and improve your company, and let's make sparks fly together.
Welcome back to Making Sparks. I'm your host, Casey Velker, sitting here with my co-host, Matthew Nix. And today, Matthew brought on a guest, which he typically does, and I'm going to let him introduce who we're talking to.
How come you're the host and I'm the co-host?
Welcome back to Making Sparks. I'm the co-host, and this is sitting with me, my host, Matthew.
You could have just said, because you're in my damn studio.
Oh, my bad. No, I'm kind of a pushover. Sorry.
All right. Thanks, Casey. Yeah, I've got a really fun guest with us today, my friend Mike Payne from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So Mike is not a stranger to the Making Chips umbrella of podcasts, and he's not been on Making Sparks yet, and we're glad that he's here. But those of you who are loyal listeners to Making Chips probably will find Mike's voice familiar, his nice, smooth, soft-spoken Tulsa voice. But no, really excited to have Mike here with us, and he is also... He's been on Making Chips, and he's a machine shop, but he's also a fellow fabricator. And just like us, he does both machining and fabrication, so full-on manufacturing operation. So excited to have you here, Mike.
It's awesome to be here. I appreciate all your time yesterday with me, and I'm looking forward to touring the shop later. And it's awesome to come to Indiana.
So the Oklahoma meets Indiana. I think that's going to be our title of the podcast.
I think that's a good one.
It's exciting. We were talking, Mike had never been to Indiana. So I said, man, you must not be an Indy 500 fan. And he said, well, I would like to. And I haven't went either.
Oh, you haven't been?
I went to the Brickyard. But
okay. But you haven't been to the race.
Yeah, I haven't been to the Indy 500. It's on the list for sure. But between the Notre Dame football and Indy 500, we're going to have to get you back out to.
Those are two things that I've always wanted to do. I think I've touched every state around you. We went through a geography lesson last night with your kids. I think I've been everywhere around, but this is my first time here. So far it's beautiful.
Yeah. And
love it.
Oklahoma is too. I've passed through Oklahoma on my way to New Mexico on a hunting trip, and went to Oklahoma to buy my first plasma cutting table.
Really?
Yeah. It was a funny story. That was back in the day when, you know, I worked on the shop floor with Dad, and like, we didn't take any days off for anything, even going to get a machine.
Sure.
And so
did that on the weekends.
So I went, I worked Saturday, and actually I used to DJ. Did you know that, Casey?
You used to DJ?
Yeah.
Really?
I was with DJ Matthew Nick.
I had a partner from high school that we DJed for all through high school, and then, you know, shortly after high school, like weddings. And so we were playing a gig at a local bar that night. Didn't get done to like 1 a.m. on Saturday. We're like, well, this would be Sunday morning. Loaded my truck and trailer up, drove all the way to the other side of Oklahoma City and got this plasma cutting table, and then drove back and then went to work Monday morning and like awake for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days or something.
Wow. Well,
I was in my early 20s. And
after the story you told me about your great, great grandfather's lunch breaks were filling up the acetylene torch, it makes sense. There's no stopping.
Yeah.
I don't travel a lot, but I have been to Oklahoma City.
Have you?
I got to go to the bombing site.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember the Times Square, like the photo of the year, I forgot what they call it. Not Times Square, but the Times.
Yes.
The photo of the year with the firefighter holding a little girl. Mm-hmm. We got to interview that firefighter
about cool.
PTSD and stuff. It was a program for a company that offered help with PTSD. So
that bombing was a matter of fact, we just passed the anniversary. All right. That was one of those moments, especially living in Oklahoma at the time. I was in college at the time. You know, it's one of those moments you remember everything, the day that happened, where you were, when you heard about it, all the everything that went along with it. That was a That was a wild day. And that site is impressive, really.
That's going down a rabbit hole, but
got the weed eater running.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we may just Mason may have to cut that whole segment out. We'll see.
Going down a rabbit hole, and that was some heavy stuff. So
after pause for a second, hold on. That's not a weed eater, that's a leaf blower.
He's going full bore right outside that door, isn't he?
Hey everyone, this is Adam Schmidt with ProFab Alliance. I'm here to bring you your spark of knowledge for this episode. Let's talk about strategic planning. You know, any business can and should do strategic planning. You know, a single piece of paper can do the trick. Get out a scratch piece of paper, write your goals down, think about how you're going to measure them throughout the year. And then with that, you got to actually go back and measure yourself. What lessons did you learn? Where did you mess up? Improve for the next year. You got to trust the process. You know, you're not going to see results overnight. If you're diligent about making adjustments along the way to keep that improvement, you know, you're going to notice year over year results from strategic planning. But overall, the main thing that you got to remember is you just got to get something put down on paper. Keep that with you, and you got to keep that scorecard and check the results.
We're back now.
Okay. So yeah,
the leaf blower situation is temporarily taken care of, but we were off air there waiting on the leaf blower. We were talking about, you know, just that's the results of a beautiful spring day. And
yeah, it has a super nice weather out there. So let's actually get into the episode.
Let's get into a dad joke.
My bad.
Oklahoma City bombing, and it got a little deep. So I think your dad joke would bring us back.
All right. I'm going to have to look it up because otherwise I'm going to forget what I was saying.
Actually, it started our weekly leadership meeting now, like a staff meeting, you know, every week we do. We've started those with a dad joke now too.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Even when they suck, everybody can just be like, make fun of that person. It's just,
right.
Okay, here we go. How does a farmer find new cows to purchase? He looks through a catalog.
Gosh.
That might get a slow clap.
Just liked them.
Yeah, dad jokes are just funny to me, yeah.
All right, let's dive in.
All right. So I guess, like, I don't know if we teased it yet, but one of the things is that you and Mike basically are in the same position in your careers, but you guys took two totally different routes. So I'll let whoever wants to kind of take over on, or let's have Mike kind of give his background maybe on how he got to where he's at.
Sure. So I won't dig into the full history because, as you mentioned earlier, Matthew, I've told that story on this, on other episodes, and a lot of people probably know it. But the short version is, you know, grew up in Tulsa, went to the University of Tulsa, left there, got into the software business. During that, we were raising some rounds of investment. Then we sold the company and found, man, I really like this transactional side of business. A big roller coaster ride over the next 15 years was really in and around private equity exclusively, running some funds and doing a lot of merger acquisition work for high net worth individuals or small investment groups and so forth, leading all the way up to, in 2017, starting talks of buying Hill Manufacturing. Did that with a couple of trusted partners. And then from there, we've done 4 more acquisitions since, and we're building within Hill. We've done some stuff outside of Hill as well, but really now the portfolio growth is centered around kind of all things manufacturing. So started out just really shops, you know, CNC shops and fabrication shops. And now we're going to broaden that a little bit and start kind of maybe acquiring some supply chain so we can kind of control our own costs and lead times and destiny. And build in and around that space. So, you know, 20 to 15 years of on the investment side of things, the transactional side of things, leading into manufacturing, and now, you know, in kind of a high growth acquisition mode in that space.
Awesome.
So, and I just want to clarify. So, Mike, when you talk about the M&A work you did, you said like over 100, you've been a part of over like 100 transactions, which is really impressive. All of those up until Hill, you were doing that as part of a private equity fund. Sometimes
Correct.
You were running the fund, you were putting it together, leading the charge, sometimes participating alongside. But
And for individuals, you know, I mean, so yes, yeah, funds.
Representing others is my point. I want to clarify for the listeners, Hill Manufacturing was your first endeavor where you, along with a partner or two, but you guys bought it yourself.
Correct.
Actually, you actually became an owner operator.
Correct.
For a period of time, you were very much an operator. We talked about that last night.
Right.
So that's kind of where the stories converge is that, you know, Mike started out in, you know, the finance and business world and M&A world and gravitated over to become an owner operator. I started out very much as an owner operator and have gravitated toward doing deals.
Right.
So that's kind of where our paths have converged, so to speak.
Right.
He's doing stuff out in Oklahoma and I'm doing it over here. And eventually our circles might literally, you know, the paths might literally cross.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're kind of doing similar stuff and we love.
Yeah. One of our investment strategies going forward in acquisitions is to diversify geographically. Right. So most everything I've done is in and around Oklahoma, not directly, but for the most part. And as we were talking last night, driving in from the airport, you know, I mean, every region of the country you go to, right, there's a different industry and focus and so forth. And it's hard to, so in Oklahoma, it's hard to diversify really outside of oil and gas, for example. There's strong aerospace, there's strong other industries, but, and oil and gas is a tremendous industry to be in. It's a roller coaster.
What you do is even third and fourth hand oil and gas. It's like you can't get away from because you can move from this customer to that customer, but this one's connected to that one that's connected to that one that's connected to oil.
Yeah. So Hill, for example, you know, revenues are somewhere in the 75% range directly oil and gas, indirectly probably 95%, right? So we have a long legacy client that Hill's had for 40 years that is like in the industrial winch industry. And we've been making the same parts for them for 40 years and new parts for them for the last three or whatever. A lot of those winches, guess where they end up? On the front of an oil truck or on an oil field. I mean, so directly or indirectly, if you're in Oklahoma, you're doing oil and gas, and which is great. We love that industry, but we have that pretty well captured to the degree that we need to, want to. So part of like our investment strategy will be, you know, as you pointed out, yeah, our circles may start crossing because we want to go get other industries. So we need to go do some acquisitions in some other areas.
Yep. And I guess thinking of our listeners, Matthew has talked about this a few times on their acquisition strategy at Nick's. Excuse me. You know, it was the same way. Started kind of locally a little bit, you know, buying a local shop here, going a little bit farther. Maybe if there's a manufacturing leader that's looking at acquisitions, what would you say about like starting off right away, like maybe going within, like you did it within Oklahoma or probably within closer distance, about why you did that?
Well, I mean, for one, so many of the opportunities, I mean, most everything I've ever done has been off market, right? So if it's going to be off market, meaning it's not sitting out there for sale necessarily, right? It's not being advertised as for sale. So those opportunities come through relationships, right? Bankers, attorneys, accountants, you know, that or vendors, you know, that
their concentration in relationships is naturally closer to home.
So the deals that pop up are closer to home. You know more about that region. You know the people, you know investors, you know the bankers, you know all the people you need to get the deal done and then operate the deal. So I think if someone were starting out with like, hey, I think I want to grow like this. I want to grow.
Or even buying your first business.
I mean, you start in your backyard. You really do. I mean, it's the broader that reach, there's more time away from your family. There's more time on the road. I mean, it's hard. I mean, you did it. Matthew just did it this week, right? Where you had to make a big loop. And that's hard. I mean, it's fun too, but it is hard. We used to, so one investment group, so Tulsa, we're a decent sized community, but we don't have a lot of direct flights in and out of Tulsa. We go to hubs and
I'm here. Yeah.
Southwest used to have more direct flights. And, you know, so even like when we would be talking sales and growth strategies inside an operating company, not necessarily acquisitions, but you'd start saying, okay, we got to reach out. We would always kind of go with what we would call like the Southwest plan, not geographically Southwest Airlines, anywhere I can fly direct on Southwest Airlines. So for us, it was like we could go to Phoenix, we could go to Denver, we could go to, I don't remember where all, you know.
Yeah, we've been having those same conversations. It's funny, you know, it's like You know, for example, the state of Indiana, we're starting to do a lot of business up in the northern part of the state. Well, there's no commercial flights up there at all.
Okay.
I mean, it's most of the day to drive up there, 5 hours.
Sure.
And to get up to the tops, roughly 5, even possibly 6 hours, depending on traffic. It's like, I can get on a flight in the morning and be in Charlotte or Atlanta by 7 o'clock in the morning. And
right.
Be home for supper.
Sure.
And Dallas.
Dallas. Yeah. So we've been having those conversations too about as we grow geographically, thinking about, you know, where do we fly nonstop? It's very accessible. It's pretty affordable to get there. And whether that's acquisition or, to your point, just finding a large customer base to.
Yeah. I want to be able to get somewhere today if I need to, right? Especially if I own the company. But even with my customers. So even like at Hill, where we're looking at, you know, part of our growth strategy is currently to get outside of Northeast Oklahoma, even, which is where we primarily are. You know, we've picked up 2 new customers in the last couple months, like kind of in northern Texas. Great. It's a 4-hour drive for me. Matter of fact, the first order we did for one of those customers, it was an expedited order, relatively small parts. They were due on a Monday. I drove them down on the Friday because I wanted to meet them face to face. But I mean, being able to make that drive, being able to make that direct flight, whether you're talking customers or acquisitions or whatever, to me is just very important.
The big takeaway there for if someone is like wanting to start their own, fabrication business, manufacturing business or whatever is, you know, just first off, start with like your relationships with that. That's what I was actually going to get into when you're talking about that. Like, if they're off market, it's always about the relationship. And you kind of know a little bit, not all the time, but you kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
Sure.
By a business like that you've already, maybe you've done business with them, or maybe you've just, worked beside them. You've just talked to them as, business owners and stuff like that. It gives you a little bit of peace of mind. Although I'm sure Matthew would also say that sometimes you might think you have peace of mind, then you go in and you got to do some more work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a black box. And I was reading Warren Buffett's annual report yesterday, which if anybody hasn't read that, I highly recommend you that they'll publish his, at least the Cliff Notes online. But I mean, he's just got such a great sense of humor, and just the way he writes is incredible. But there's always some unbelievable business insights in there. But yeah, he was saying the same thing. He was like, picking the winners is not as easy as you would think. I mean, here's the guy that's done it more successfully than arguably anyone in the
world. Sure.
He was just like, yeah, it's not as easy as you think. And, he alluded to the fact that he picks some losers sometimes. And
it's inevitable.
But to your point, Casey, yeah, I mean, if you're doing deals within your network and businesses that you know and people you know, I mean, yeah, the likelihood of it not being a black box is probably higher.
Here's some quick math for the manufacturing leader. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you get to keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, borrowing, it feels like everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform for one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and it can be accessed from anywhere. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. There's a reason over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/chips. That's netsuite.com/chips.
Mike, so you had a history of in private equity and with high net worth individuals and families doing deals. What led you to want to run your own manufacturing business? Because it's hard.
It is hard.
Running a business is hard. A manufacturing business is hard. You could have just kept doing deals, taking your cut of every deal and rode off into the sunset. So why in the hell did you run your own manufacturing business?
There's probably several answers to that. So all along that line was, pretty regularly looking for the right deal for me. when I was in the software business, we primarily did software for manufacturers. So I think
you had exposure.
I think early in my career, I had a excitement for the industry. I got to, when we were doing the software integrations we were doing then, it was mostly really large companies, Fortune 500 style companies. So you get to see some really cool stuff manufactured, right? And it was neat to walk a shop floor and see stuff. I think I'm naturally, a lot of people that have known me throughout my adult life too, like, how did you not become an engineer? I like doing stuff. I like making things. I like working with my hands. And I think the answer to that question is I didn't know that existed. I mean, I probably, had I known more that there was a career field out there, I very well might have gone to school for that. The Hill specifically, so I had known the owner for, gosh, probably 30 years, which is, I mean, as a teenager, I knew the former owner. Wasn't involved in the business, wasn't at all involved in the business, but I knew of the business. We reconnected probably 15 years ago professionally, just as she was growing the company and I'm out in the business community. And again, it's relationships, right? I mean, Tulsa's a good sized community, but it's tiny. Everybody knows each other. And so we had reconnected and she might invest in some deals that I was doing at the time. And then probably, so we've had owned the company 6 years. So probably somewhere around 10 years ago, she was starting to look at her exit. So I was advising her on selling the business. All the buy offers that came in, I would kind of flush things out or help her flush things out. And, but as I was helping her do that, I'm looking at it and going, it's a great business. I mean, there were so many things that hit the targets of what I was looking for, and actually made a couple of offers prior to the final offer. And, the first time I couldn't pull the cash together. The second time we agreed on a good offer and on a good deal really for both of us. She had the foresight, God bless her, to pull out of the deal because she felt like a downturn was coming and she was potentially setting me up for failure. And frankly, she was right. A downturn did come for the next 18 months. It was actually the longest downturn in the oil and gas. I think it was the longest, if I remember the metrics correctly, it was like the longest number of, however many months it was, 18 months, 19, 20, whatever. It was the longest downturn in the oil and gas industry, maybe in the history of the oil and gas industry. And I would have been buying it 30 days before that started. And I would have been so strapped on capital, I'm not sure exactly how we would have survived that much of a downturn. She saw that come and said, Mike, I can't set you up for failure. Like, let's not do this. I was disappointed, of course. But I, to your point, Matthew, though, I mean, I've got my other stuff going on. I just keep working. And then fast forward a couple years, another offer comes in. She was highly motivated at that point. It wasn't a great offer. So my partner and I approached her with a better offer and she accepted that. But to your question of like, why did I want to do that? I mean, so that's kind of how it came about. But no, I think I've always, so even in a lot of the, we talk about all those deals I've been involved in, a lot of those, not really very many of them were turnarounds per se, but whether I was operating on behalf of a fund or an individual or anything like that, I was often tasked with, okay, buy it, get it running the way I like this business to run or the fund wants the business to run. So that might take anywhere from 3 months to 9 to a year or whatever, say on average 6 months that I'm in learning the business, learning what makes it tick, what can make it better, what do we need to fix? And so, I mean, as much as I love the transaction side of things, I love operating. I mean, I just really do.
I think it's like a classic example of the grass isn't always greener, right? So
right.
Like when you're in there operating these businesses, and we get a little dose of doing the deals here and there, that's intoxicating. And it's like, man, I just want to do deals all the time. But I have spent a lot of time reflecting on that. And I thought like, man, if this is all I did, I would really miss. And so one of which you just mentioned, we make cool stuff.
Right.
Like, it's just so rewarding and fulfilling to be a part of making the cool stuff. And then the other one for me is the relationships with the team members. Like those are the two things that I would really miss, is having that connection to the actual production of the product or service and the people. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is when you just do deals all the time, you don't really have that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love, in all the different things I've been involved in, I mean, the operations side of things, they're a blast. I mean, and, you know, to your point, like, we make cool stuff, right? I mean, I joke with my team sometimes, you know, we make something and, like, you know, you look at it, and especially if it's something that we had to do a little bit of figuring out on our own type stuff. It wasn't just make this part to print. You know, we look at it and it's like, wow, it's like we're professionals at this. You know, like, you're kind of surprised you made it, you know? And, you know, even like some of the stuff that you show me you guys have fabricated, or that you personally have, like with your gate and stuff. I mean, you got to sometimes step back and go, I made that, like that. And it looks like someone that knows what they're doing made it, right? It's not just a hobbyist in the garage. We're good at what we do and it's fun. And then, yeah, the daily working relationships. I mean, I love my crew. I've seen how you interact with your crew. I mean, they're our friends, our family, our, and I would miss that if I was not in an operating role.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So let's talk a little bit about just the fact of, you know, our relationship, and you're in Oklahoma, I'm in Indiana. We're in the same business, you know, theoretically competitors, although, you know, we're not
sure
bumping into each other at this point. But, you know, just the fact that you're coming out visiting. Casey, you recently joined a peer group as well. That's always something I've been really passionate about, is, you know, peer-to-peer support, and all the way to, you know, we have a formal advisory board, but even if you don't have that, you know, just having an informal,
having that network,
your network. Yeah. Mike's going to tour our shop today, and, you know, I'm looking forward to going out to Tulsa to tour his shop and just open the doors to each other. And so I just think that's such an important thing. And you've talked about this before, about how open our industry is really in general. I was at an event earlier this week. We went up to the FMA Safety Awards. We were blessed enough to receive one of the annual safety awards from the Fabricators and Manufacturers.
Congratulations. Thank
you. They put on FabTech, but we went up to their headquarters for a conference and had a nice dinner, and sitting at the dinner table, just randomly got placed at the dinner table, another business that got an award as well. And they're based up near Wisconsin, but a big fab shop. And we are starting to get into some of the things that they do. He said, come on up, come visit us.
You know, right.
Just come see our shop and we'll be glad to show you. You know,
that's one of the things I love about this industry. I mean, I've been in a lot of different industries, a lot of different spaces. And I mean, this industry everybody helps each other. I mean, I mean, just this week, not everybody, but I mean, you know, just this week, right? I mean, I've sent you some stuff like, hey, I
sent me a job to quote. To,
right.
As you said,
we're going to reach capacity.
You have more hours sold than you can get done right now. It just so happens that I've got a location or two that could use some more work.
And sure.
3 months from now, we might have more work than we can handle, and I'll be calling you and saying, right, hey, Mike, is this something that is a fit for you guys?
And, you know, even just, I mean, so many shop tours I've been on, you know, locally in Oklahoma and then even nationally, it's amazing. And I mean, we did it, you and I have done it, and I've done it with others where you just, well, here's how I tackle some stuff. That's a great idea, especially for me coming not from the shop floor. I mean, I've had a ton to learn in the last 6 years, right? And I'm completely comfortable on the shop floor now.
A lot of value to add for the people that only are on the shop floor and look at it like this, right? And that would be an awesome tease for our next episode we're going to do. But I'm not going to go there yet. I think I'll let Casey do that. But yeah, you bring a different perspective. So,
well, it's funny, my guys. As a matter of fact, it happened this week before I'd left town. They'll get so mad at me. You know, these are some of the best machinists there are. I mean, they've been doing it for 40 years. They have reputations, certainly locally and regionally, as being some of the best. And Brett, who's my shop manager, and he does 99.9% of our programming and so forth, he's shown me a part, and he's like, man, I think, you know, we quoted it to run this way, but I think we're going to have to run it this way to really get what we need. And I'm notorious around the shop for just asking some stupid question because I don't know. Like, I'm not trapped in this is how you should do something, right? I haven't been doing it for 40 years.
He's a wonderer if you talk about the book we talked about earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh.
Patrick Lencioni's, what is it? Six
Types of Working Genius.
Yeah. It's a great one. So I highly recommend anybody listening
to Six Types of what?
Working Genius.
Okay.
And Patrick Lencioni has a whole series of fantastic books. We really adopted
Ideal Team Player.
Ideal Team Player is one of them. We've adopted a lot of his philosophies into our business. But there's the Working Genius talks about, and you can take a survey and your whole leadership team can do it as well. But it's basically your working genius is what like your God-given talents are and what you gravitate
to. Okay.
Energy.
Little names. Yeah. What energizes you. So
you're a wonder.
If you work in your working genius area, that's the area that energizes you where you could just go and go and go. And if you work in and we all have to work in different, your frustration zone is the area that sucks the life out of you. So if you're a wanderer and you have to do detail oriented work, it sucks the life out of you, right? He has little cute little names for all of them. I think Wanderers one and Discerners one. That was a big takeaway for me. I found a couple of the folks in our business that are the discerners, and it used to frustrate the hell out of me when I would take them ideas and they would just poo-poo all over my ideas.
Get that, because you're an inventor, right? So
I can go get critical. I can go get critiqued
and
on this.
And use those guys for that. It's like, I know they're the discerners, and hey, I'm just going to drop this on your desk and I'm going to walk away and I'll let you poo-poo all over it. And I know it's going to happen and it's going to make it a lot better, you know? So anyways, we went on it.
Yeah. Basically I said, you're a wonder because you said you asked the questions. That's actually literally the definition. Basically it's just like, why do we do this? Or why can't we do that?
That's exactly what happened. I think it was Monday, you know, so Brett's showing me this on the screen. He's like, I'm going to have to do this and then this. So we're adding an op. And I was like, well, if we're going back to the lathe, couldn't you just do, instead of adding that mill op, couldn't we just run, when you have to go back to the lathe, couldn't we just run it on a live tooling lathe and do that chamfer there instead of, and you know, it was one of those, and it happens a little bit. I'm not going to act like I'm brilliant, but you know, where they'll just go, well, yeah, dang it. Like, you know, and matter of fact, he got up, he says, well, I'm going to go tell Hank he's dumb. You know, because like they hadn't figured it out and I come in clueless, right? And had a good idea. But they do it to me all the time too, right? When you start talking about the things I'm good at, and they go, well, why couldn't we just do this? And you go, well, that's brilliant.
And I think it also goes back to the value of the peer network.
Sure.
If it's someone that does have a deep understanding of your business, I mean, they're just coming at it from a different standpoint. Or even I'm involved in a peer business ownership group that's all people from all different industries.
And that's...
It's too,
Casey's in one of those too. I think you call it people. Sometimes they'll call it a mastermind group.
Yeah, we cheated. And we kind of copied off of Matthew. When me and the lady that kind of started it, mainly she drove it. I was just kind of there to bounce ideas off of. But we were like, yeah, Matthew's been with this group for a long time, and he always talks about how when they get together, they just bounce ideas, like just different things, and from different industries.
Just the get-togethers, you build the relationship.
Yeah,
the group was dealing with a personnel issue literally yesterday, and we have a group text.
Yes,
texting to the group text, and you know, no different than I would reach out to Mike if I'm dealing with the issue. And I just can't, I can't harp enough on the value.
Yeah, I would say there's two ways to look at it too. A lot of what you were talking about was being in the same industry, and I think that's huge. Like for the longest time, a lot of people in the same industry, and they still do it. A lot of companies still do this. They're looking over their shoulder, but you can be competitive and still be kind of friendly. And you always say anytime lives all ships. And I totally agree with that.
Well, like, have the guy next door to you be in your industry specific peer group.
Right.
Shameless plug here. I got to get this in. The ProFab does this, guys. So if you're listening,
right.
I mean, but seriously, like we can facilitate that. So one of the things, Schmidt, who's our managing partner of ProFab, he has a peer group running right now. We're going to be launching a second one, but he helps facilitate and make sure there's no competing interest, because that kills the...
You can't have it too close.
Can't be open.
Or doing the exact same thing with the exact same customers. But we've got a group of six or seven businesses that are from across the Midwest and South and so forth, and they're not competing. And he helps facilitate those conversations, and it's been really awesome. So
I think there's immense value in not being just in your industry and having, like you said, the different industries, because I always say that in marketing, if you don't copy your competitor, you don't want to be a me too to your competitor. But if you find someone who's serving a similar customer base or serving a similar audience, there you can kind of borrow some ideas from them, because they're already communicating successfully to the people that you want to communicate to. So why reinvent the wheel? But you don't have to, you know, you're not copying your competitors. You're copying, and again, you're not even really copying these people, but you're talking to the same people.
Well, I've long believed this, and I think it's actually been one of my strengths throughout my career, because, again, you know, mentioned earlier, just through all the things I've been through, you know, whether it's in technology, I mean, just go down the list of the industries, you know, certain industries do certain things certain ways, and they've done it that way forever, right? So you can go walk into any business that maybe is wanting to grow, wanting to sell, wanting to buy, whatever. And inevitably, we all think we're special, right? I mean, we all think, well, we're unique. My company's unique. This company's unique. The way I do things is unique. This industry's unique, whatever. At the end of the day, you're really not, right? You have revenue, you have cost of goods sold, you have SG&A, and you have net profit. You have a balance sheet that has assets and liabilities on it. You have people. You have customers. I mean, 80, and we'll go with the cliche 80-20 rule, right? I mean, 80% of businesses are all the same. There is an element to your business, to your industry, whatever, that is unique. But the number of times I've seen a good idea in the real estate industry, the way they do something that is just industry norm, translate to a construction company or a manufacturing company that doesn't do things that way. But when you say, why can't we do things this way? And you're told, well, that's not how we do it in the industry, but why can't we? And you talk through that. It's like, that's actually a great idea. Let's try it. And it works fabulously.
That's cool. You know, Matthew, at the beginning of that soundbite, he talked about a lot of things that were numbers.
Yeah, I was thinking the same.
That's what you were thinking? So I kind of want to tease a second part of our interview here with Mike to talk about, you know, what's the difference between thinking by the numbers? Why am I teasing that, Matthew?
Well, I think Mike's got he's got something up his sleeve that he's going to be adding to the Making Chips Metalworking Nation here. So we might talk about that in our next episode.
Yep. So stick around. We're going to keep talking to Mike, and we're going to talk about numbers. Yeah.
Numbers.
So
yeah. So yeah. Remember, if you like what you're hearing, what do they need to do, Casey?
Well, they need to subscribe, share, review, all those things, rate. Main thing I want people doing is just sharing it with people that are going to find value in what we're all talking about. We're all just talking. This is what's cool about podcasts. We all just like to talk about the things we know, and then hopefully bring on people like Mike that can tell us a little bit more about the things we know. And then you guys can share it with the people that you know. And I'm just going on and on because I like to talk. So again, like it, rate it, shade it, share it, review it. Yeah.
All right.
Listen a second time.
Listen to the second part.
All right. So Mike, you can close this out. If you're not making sparks,
you're not making money.
That's right.